Chapter 8. Changes in Russell Square. Mr. Sedley's business failed just as old Mr. Osborne had predicted. His house in Russell Square and everything inside it was sold in an auction to pay his debts. Many people came to the house to buy the fine furniture, dishes, and silverware. Captain William Dobbin came to buy Amelia's piano. When the piano was put up for sale at the auction, Dobbin found that he was competing with someone sitting behind him who he couldn't see. It was Becky. Even though they were in debt, Becky still wanted to buy Amelia's piano. Perhaps it was because it had belonged to Amelia. Or perhaps she felt attached to it because it reminded her of her brief visit to the Sedley's house. Finally, however, Dobbin offered more money than Becky, and the piano was his. He had it sent to the small house where the Sedleys now lived. He sent it anonymously because he didn't want Amelia to feel grateful to him. Amelia assumed that it was from George, just as Dobbin had intended. The Sedleys were able to rent a small house in an unfashionable area of London only because Joss was giving them money. Things were now very difficult for the Sedleys. Mr. Sedley's business friends disappeared, and Mrs. Sedley's friends were too busy to see her. Worst of all was John Osborne, George's father. He wrote a cruel note to Amelia, informing her that because of her father's financial problems, all relations between the two families were ended, including her engagement to George. Poor Amelia was devastated, and her father was furious. "John Osborne is a cruel, ungrateful man," Mr. Sedley exclaimed as Amelia lay crying on her bed. "You must forget about George. I want you to send back every present and letter he ever gave you." Amelia gathered up the little gifts that George had given her over the years and read his letters again and again. Finally, she put everything in a box. Later that day, Dobbin, who had become a loyal friend of the family's, came to visit. He was shocked at how pale and depressed Amelia looked. They spoke for a few minutes, and then Amelia said, "I'm not feeling very well. I must rest. Would you please take this to George?" She gave Dobbin the box and left the room. Dobbin took the box to George the following morning.
"Look, Dobbin, she sent me back everything," George said when he opened it. "It's all over. Here, read her note."
"My dear George, my father has ordered me to send back these things to you. I do not think you are responsible for the end of our engagement, of which your father informed me. I will think of you when I play my old piano. You were very sweet to send it, Amelia." Suddenly, George Osborne felt very sad. He thought about Amelia and how sweet and charming she was.
"Give me her new address," he said,
ashamed that he didn't even know where the Sedleys were living.
"I want to marry her, Dobbin. But what about my father? He will disinherit me. It will be difficult for me if I lose my father's money."
For weeks there have been rumours that the British Army is going to Europe to fight against Napoleon, Dobbin said. "Distinguish yourself on the battlefield. Your father will be so proud of you that he will forgive you for marrying Amelia." It broke his heart to say this, because he loved Amelia too. A short time later, George arrived at the Sedley's door. Amelia flew into his arms and cried on his shoulder.
"Will you marry me?" George asked.
"You are the finest, kindest man I know," said Amelia, taking his hands.
It will be no surprise to know that George was thinking the same thing. Dobbin soon convinced Mr. Sedley to let Amelia marry George.
"It is the best way for you to take revenge for the way Osborne has treated you and your family," he explained.
Mr. Sedley liked the idea and finally agreed to the marriage. The wedding took place in a small church. The only guests were Mr. and Mrs. Sedley, Joss and Dobbin. Dobbin was nearly crying and could hardly speak. After the ceremony, the guests waved goodbye to the young couple, who left in a carriage for Brighton, a fashionable seaside town. Joss planned to join them a few days later, and Dobbin said that he would come after informing old Mr. Osborne about the marriage, as he had promised George he would do. While they were out walking one day in Brighton, Amelia and George saw Becky and Rawdon, who had arrived there a week earlier. The two couples met frequently over the next few days. One of the main subjects they talked about was the family disapproval of both their marriages. "We came here to try to see Rawdon's aunt," Becky explained. "She's a rich old woman. She hasn't wanted to meet us since our marriage, but we thought she'd be more agreeable now that she's on holiday." Rawdon laughed and then told stories about the debt collectors who bothered them in London. "But they never get a penny out of my clever little Becky," he said. Since Matilda Crawley had stopped sending them money, Becky and Rawdon had become experts at living well on credit. Now you will understand why the debt collectors were always at their door. In the evenings, George, Joss and Rawdon played cards and billiards, which pleased Becky because Rawdon usually won. It made Amelia unhappy, however, as she didn't approve of gambling. She was also becoming jealous of Becky, who was so entertaining and clever, and who charmed the men and made them laugh. One afternoon, Dobbin arrived in Brighton and went immediately to Amelia and George's hotel. He found the young couple on the terrace with Becky, Rawdon and Joss. "What did my father say about my marriage?" George asked the moment he saw his old friend. Dobbin looked very pale and serious. "I'll tell you soon, but first I've got very important news. Our regiment has been ordered to go to Belgium to fight Napoleon. The whole army is going. We leave for Europe next week."